Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ken Hudson Show. Ken has investigated the strange and the unusual for over two decades. He's led ghost tours, and he's accessed the most haunted places in the Southwest. He's the author of some 40 books of the paranormal, unusual, hidden treasure, conspiracies, and the downright strange. His personal experiences and the experiences of many others are related on this show and in his many books. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy as Ken takes us through tales of terror, trauma, and triumph. And now, your host, Mr. Ken.
And good evening. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show right here on the one and only Blog Talk Radio. Coming to you live from our studios in El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Now, we have a interesting guest tonight. We have Leslie Rule. Now, we're waiting for her to call in. She should be with us in just a few minutes, and we'll be talking to her about her books that she has written about true stories of encounters with ghosts and the paranormal. And, of course, who knows what else will pop up as we go along. Now, of course, when you're talking about writing stories of the strange and the unusual, it helps to come in contact with what you're writing about. And that, of course, entails actually venturing into some of these places. Okay, Leslie's with us. Heidi, would you bring her on, please? Leslie?
Yes?
Well, how are you doing?
I am good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, even though it was 103 here.
Well, you've got us beat. I think it's 88 in the Seattle area.
And you probably get rain, which we rarely do.
Well, we haven't had too much of it in the last weeks. That's mostly winter time.
Well, it used, when we first moved here, it would be hotter than blue blazes, and then it would rain most of the night. And now it's hotter than blue blazes, and it rains every once in a while.
Ah, well, we need the rain.
Definitely. Now, you've written a number of books about ghosts.
Well, I have four of my books are nonfiction collections of ghost stories.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got me beat on that, too. Now, how many do you have, 40?
I've got 43 books out, and 16 of them are about the strange, the unusual, and hauntings.
Well, you've got me beat on the weather and on the number of books.
Well, that's something to do. How did you get started writing about ghosts?
Well, I grew up in a haunted house, and so I've always had a fascination with it. When I was a kid, we lived on in a house that was actually built on a Native American burial ground. It sounds like something out of a Spielberg movie, but it's true. And we had a lot of weird stuff happening when I was growing up, including a sobbing ghost who would make an appearance around the neighborhood. Well, she wouldn't appear, but people would hear her. And
yeah.
I heard her once. She cried in this heart-wrenching sobbing. And I just assumed it was my sister when I heard it. But I jumped up and ran toward the sound, and the crying just moved throughout the house until it just vanished.
Did you ever find out why she cried?
I have an idea. The house up the street, a place where I babysat, the family there would hear the crying every night, and it would start out in the field behind their house as a vague sobbing, and eventually it would materialize in their basement, and it was loud and accompanied by the sounds of jars rolling and bones crunching. Well, as it turns out, that house was right next door to an old house that had been Daddy Draper's orphanage, home for children. And a few years after the sobbing had occurred, and I later researched trying to find what might be causing the crying, I was actually on a television show live, Northwest Afternoon in Seattle, and I had arranged for a friend of mine who is a renowned psychic to be with us via the telephone. And I had sent her a packet of photographs for her to examine during the show. And she didn't open the envelope until she was right on the air with us. And when she brought out a photograph of the site of my childhood home, she had no idea what she was looking at. She didn't know it was my childhood home. She looked at the pictures, and she said, "I hear crying." And she said, "There's a woman who had her baby taken away from her because people thought that she was too young to care for the child. So it was taken away from her, and she's wandering around looking for the child and crying." Well, that gave me chills because, of course, right next door to the place where she was most often heard was the home for children. And the psychic didn't know that, and I hadn't even put it together until Nancy Myers suggested that. And so I think it's a very real possibility that the ghost that we heard did indeed have a child taken away from her and was perhaps raised in Daddy Draper's home for children.
Interesting. You know, El Paso is the most haunted city in the country. I've written about over 500 locations, and I'm still going.
Well, I got to get over there so you can take me around to some of those places.
Oh, by all means. In fact, the most haunted building in town is the oldest high school in town.
Really? And is it haunted by students?
By a number of students. There was also underneath it is a tunnel system that connects up to a very old tunnel system that runs all underneath the town.
Really?
And
what happened to the students? Did they die at the school?
Well, one of them was a cheerleader who committed suicide because her boyfriend broke his neck on the football field.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
And the I spent an evening, I got the opportunity to chase her one evening. The head custodian and myself were the only ones in that building. We went up to where the night crew sees her all the time. And he said, you can search for her to your heart's content. You just have to do it the way I always see her, and that's in the dark.
Did she wear her cheerleader's uniform?
Yes, she did.
And does she appear to be, can you see the expression on her face at all?
Well, I didn't get the opportunity to see her. I heard her.
Was she yelling cheers?
No, she was running through the dark just a step or two ahead of us and giggling every once in a while because apparently she was having fun.
Glad she's having fun in the afterlife. Maybe she found her football boyfriend there, and they're having a good time, huh?
Well, I don't think that's the case. One of the stories that I collected when I was researching for that book, the brother of another talk show host used to drive up and down that street every day going to UTEP, University of Texas in El Paso. And he would always see this girl sitting in a window on the top floor, and she would wave, and he would wave back. And he told his sister, "She's absolutely stunning. I don't care how old she is. I'm going to stop and ask her for a date." And the sister knew the story and said, "You can't. She's too old for you." She knew he had never believed the fact that that was a ghost.
So did he try to ask her out anyway?
Apparently not. At least as near as I can find out, he didn't. But she's been.
So she was it. Was it the window In the school where he saw her, or
up on the top floor. Now the interesting thing is, every day at the time he would drive by, there was a class in that room. They wouldn't see her, but he could see her from the outside.
You know, that's so interesting, and I find that kind of scenario occurs often where only certain people will see an apparition.
Yep.
Sometimes a whole group of people will see the same apparition, and sometimes only one or maybe two or three people in the group will see it.
That's true.
And windows, I find, are one of the top places where people see ghosts, that and in mirrors. And the publisher, by the way, does have a copy of Ghost in the Mirror on the way to you. I think it'll probably get there tomorrow.
It's late.
But we can talk about it next time.
That's true. Now, the interesting thing about this particular young lady, though she died there in the school, it used to have indoor balconies that overlooked what we would call a food court today.
Mm-hmm.
And people would see her recreating it, and it was upsetting the students. So according to what I was told by the school police force, because it's an actual police force, not a security force, they actually renovated that floor to remove the section where that particular area was. Of course, administration denied it and said it was just an urban legend, but the local officers assured me they had to furnish the security to keep the students out of the area while the work was being done.
So now she jumped to her death.
Yes.
And so people were seeing her continuously doing that.
Correct. She'd run down the hall and, take a swan dive.
And that's what she did. What do you know about what year that happened?
1949.
Oh, wow. She has been around for a while.
Now, there's some very interesting stories about that particular school. In one case, students there in the evening will hear the sound of lockers shutting.
Mm-hmm.
When there wouldn't be anybody, shutting lockers. Those that stayed late for band practice quite often had run-ins with a little old lady who would walk down the hall and go in the band room and shut the door. The maintenance office and shut the door, and when people would go look for her, there'd be nobody there.
Was she a teacher or a secretary at the school who had died?
Nobody knows who she was.
That is very, I wonder, too, if it possibly is someone who had gone to the school years before and had good memories and then died years later and is manifesting as she looked at the time of her death in a place that meant something to her.
Well, that could be because a number of students, I say a number, at one point in time there were stories about a witch's coven that would do their ceremonies in the tunnels underneath the school.
Really?
Yep.
Huh. Well, if I was going to haunt someplace, I don't think it would be my school. I was so anxious to get out of school, get away from there.
Well, I always say that, chasing ghosts has allowed me to prove the existence of heaven and hell, because wouldn't you say spending eternity in high school is hell?
Definitely. But only thing worse would be junior high school.
Well, that's true. That was not a fun time for anybody, I'm sure.
What about your hospitals there? Do you have very many haunted hospitals in the area? Because that's another area that I tend to find to be very haunted.
There's a hospital here. In fact, there's quite a number of them, actually, because this used to be kind of the dumping ground for folks who had tuberculosis. So there are quite a number of sanitariums. And one of them... It's called Southwest, which has been one of the names it's had over its incarnation. I got right now, there's some offices on the first floor, and there's a long-term acute care center on the third floor, and the rest of the building is empty, or it was. And they kind of let me wander around. I'm considered a little bit eccentric. And
yes.
I was wandering through the building. I was up on the fourth floor, and I got the photograph of a nurse standing behind me reflected in the window. So after I tried
was a ghost?
Yes. In fact, they did a movie here called The Burning Plain, and when they panned across the front of the building, they actually caught her on camera and thought it looked so good that they wanted to get a release so they could use that film in the movie, searched the building from top to bottom, and there was nobody dressed in the old-fashioned nurse's uniform she was wearing.
That is a great story. One of the more interesting haunted hotels or hospitals that I've come across is one actually in San Antonio. Have you been to the Emily Morgan Hotel in San Antonio?
No, I've investigated the Minger, and I've written quite a number of stories about some other places in San Antonio, but I haven't been to that one.
Well, you've got to check it out next time you're there. It's also very close to the Alamo, and it used to be the Medical Arts Building, and the upper floors were used as a hospital. And people have seen a number of things there over the years that are kind of bizarre. People staying in the upper rooms report the sound of what sounds like a medical car or a cart that they would use to carry the medicines and the food on.
Uh-huh.
They can hear that rattling past their doors at night. And somebody once walked out into the hallway and saw an old woman floating down the hall. And then I talked to the front desk guy who told me about seeing a really pretty woman, a really pretty blonde, walking through the lobby. And he had his eyes on her because she was so gorgeous, he couldn't take them off. And as she crossed the lobby, she passed behind a column, but she didn't come out the other side. She just went behind the column and never came out, and he jumped over the desk and ran and peeked behind the column, and no sign of her. I love that area. That is by the Alamo and the Riverwalk. That is just teeming with paranormal energy.
We've got a couple of nurses that do rounds, even though they've been dead for quite a number of years.
Well, they're dedicated workers.
One of them even gives medication, and she's never been wrong.
Seriously? She gives medicine?
Yes. People have been woken up to take their medication, and they said the nurse just gave it to them, and the little pill thing will be on the bedside table.
Wow.
In fact, that hospital I was talking about is one of them. The nurse was decapitated by the elevator.
Oh, no.
And there was a maintenance man named Charlie, who one of the elevators goes all the way to the basement. And he had taken it down to the basement, and he cut the power off and crawled under it. Somehow the power cut back on, and went all the way down and crushed him.
Oh.
He is seen quite often in and around the elevator. And that day I photographed the non-existent nurse. I've been given a tour of the hospital by the, I guess he's the chief operating officer. And he went to do something, and I went to the top floor, and he said, now the elevator that goes to the basement is out of order and it's not working. The only one that's going to come is this other elevator. So I'm standing there waiting on the elevator to go down, and the one that comes is the elevator that's supposed to be out of order.
Uh-huh.
And I thought about it for a minute, and I said, well, you know, what the hell? So I got on, and all the way down, I'm listening to the absolute best elevator music I've ever heard in my life.
Really?
It was outstanding. And when I got to the first floor, I come off and, you know, I kind of poked around because, you know, as I say, the place is deserted. And I hear somebody running, and I turn around, and there he comes around the corner going, I thought we'd lost you. Anything else you want to see? And I said, well, I've got a couple of hundred pictures here, so I need to, you know, go see about them. But I want to compliment you on your elevator music. It is absolutely outstanding. And he looked at me for a second, and he said, I appreciate that, but we don't have any. Yes, you do. and it's excellent. He said, no, we don't. And he got on the elevator. I got on with him, and, of course, we couldn't hear any music. But I listened to it for a good 5 or 6 minutes as we very slowly made our way down.
So you actually have a photo of the nurse. You caught one yourself?
I don't have it. It was taken by the film crew.
The film crew. Okay. Do you have it on your website?
The new website will have all kinds of pictures. It will be up in October. I did have it up. I took it down, but I will arrange to get you a copy.
Oh, I'd love to see that. She sounds like she's almost kind of an angel. She's helping people and giving them their medicine?
That's what she was doing.
That's my new topic I'm working on. I have a January 1st deadline, a book on real-life angel encounters and miracles. And I think that sometimes ghosts behave like angels, and sometimes some of these spirits that help people are actually spiritual beings, are actually angels. But it's amazing how many cases we see of ghosts assisting people.
I have heard about that, yes.
And do you find, as you're researching, a lot of people who talk about their grandparents coming to them sometimes when they're in danger and they need something?
I've picked up a number of stories about that.
I think that's really incredible. I have a case of a woman who was in her car, and she wasn't paying close attention, and her little boy was in the back seat, and all of a sudden she heard a voice that sounded like her grandfather yell, "Look up, damn it!" And she looked up just in time to see that she was about to have a head-on collision with a truck, and she managed to swerve out of the way just in time. And so I think it's kind of cool that our grandparents and other ancestors might be looking after us.
Well, certainly that's a possibility. It's also interesting, in this day and time, everybody and their brother thinks they're a ghost hunter.
Uh-huh. It's very popular. It's a very popular hobby right now.
Well, we've got some people here that are overnight experts in anything and everything you'd ever want to talk about.
Well, that seems to be the case in just about, any area you can think of. There are always people who want to think they know it all, but sadly they miss a lot because they're so sure they already know it all.
Yeah. In fact, we got one here that pretends to be me.
How do I know this is the real Ken Hudnall? How do I know I'm not talking to the imposter?
Well, now, certainly that's possible. Everything I've
done. Does he look like you?
No. But I did ghost tours. And he would, when he got started, he thought the best way to get started was to, to give him instant credibility was to impersonate somebody. And I was the one doing most of the tours, so he started
Smart guy. Very clever.
Actually, a bit of a sleaze, but other than that.
Well, you know what they say, it's the sincerest form of flattery, imitation?
It's the most sincere form of flattery, and I'm the most flattered person in town.
Well, is he still at this?
Still out there, still being an expert. If you're a nuclear physicist, he knows more about it than you do.
Huh. Well, I'll just have to go on his show one of these days and just see how much he knows.
Well, if you like cussing and carrying on, his is the show to do.
So he seriously has a show, too?
He calls it a show.
There's another Leslie Rule out there, and she lives in San Francisco, and she's a writer also, and she also has a border collie. I read that online. And I've found the email for her and tried to email her, but I've never heard back. And it's kind of funny because people get us mixed up all the time. And she does something called digital storytelling. I have no idea what that is, but people will sometimes write to me thinking that I'm her. And I've actually seen, I was once scheduled to speak at a conference, and the people putting the conference together, it was a paranormal conference, actually found a photo of her on the web and put it on top of my bio.
Now, that's wonderful.
It was actually, it's kind of funny. You just have to laugh about it. But one of these days I would like to talk to her, considering we're both Leslie Rule and we're both writers.
Yeah, I came across her bio today and thought it was interesting.
Oh, you did just today?
Yeah, I was.
Did you think that she was me?
Initially.
Yeah, it's interesting. She and I should get together and do a YouTube video explaining the difference.
Well,
I can never actually get a hold of her.
Yeah, quite often when you've got someone who gets their start taking advantage of that type of confusion, it can.
Well, I don't think that was the case with her. I think that really is her name, and she really is a writer.
But it's interesting that she went into doing the same thing you're doing.
Yeah, it is, but I can't say when she started. Maybe she started before me, so
I've got enough.
I certainly wouldn't blame. I mean, Leslie Rule isn't a very common name, but you know, a lot of people are born with it, so you can't really blame them.
No, true. There's another guest that I periodically have, Heather Graham. There's an actress, Heather Graham.
Yes.
I had Heather on the show, and then there was something on TMZ about Heather Graham was teaching pole dancing or something like that, and I had a photograph of her doing a pole dance. She has the same long hair that the author has, and I mean, I got all kinds of folks telling
me. Well,
I'm
really glad the other Leslie Rule isn't doing that. That would be kind of embarrassing.
this became quite interesting because I got a bunch of calls wanting to know if I had seen the photograph of her doing the pole dance. I looked and figure out it wasn't her. And now
yeah.
The website says she's the original Heather.
Well, do you think that the guy impersonating you is doing pole dances?
If he thought I was, he'd be out there doing them.
Well, have you confronted him about pretending to be you?
Oh, he's the most innocent person you'd ever want to meet. And I used to blow the whole thing off until he orchestrated a physical assault on me one evening.
That's pretty scary.
I thought it was. Of course, I was a foot taller, and it didn't work out the way he thought it was going to, but these are the type of exciting things you run into when you are in the public eye.
Yeah, sometimes it can be a little bit scary. In general, though, it seems like people are pretty cool, and I get a lot of nice emails from readers, and one of the ways I get stories is I get readers writing to me saying it made me feel better to read the stories in the book because I thought I was the only person that had this kind of thing happen to me. And I think it really it gives credibility when people are willing to stand behind their words and let you use their real name. And I particularly like getting photographs of people who've had the experience because I think that makes it more believable to the reader.
Yep. I agree. Yeah,
it's amazing how many people are willing to share once you know that you're going to treat their story with respect and you're not going to act like they're a nut because they had a paranormal experience.
Well, when I started, I had retired and I was going to watch TV, and my wife wanted me to do something that required me to move.
So
I went back to writing, and I'd grown up like you in a house that had a reputation of being haunted. And when I started trying to gather the stories, nobody would tell me any of the stories because in the culture here, talking about the ghost is literally supposed to be calling them. And nobody wanted to call a ghost. And so I was, I had to rake and scrape to get enough stories for the first book. And then people who had refused to tell me the stories, when I'd run into them, be mad I hadn't put their stories in the book. And I said, but you wouldn't tell me your story. But you knew what it was, you should have put it in anyway.
Yeah, people are funny.
Some folks just sound strange.
But yeah, well, that's what makes things interesting, huh?
Definitely does that. In the chat room, my call screener is talking about the time her husband pimped her out to a ghost.
You're kidding.
No.
Is she joking?
No. I heard the story when I was... there's a ghost town they go to quite often. And the... let's see, how'd it go? She was changing in one of the rooms and looks up and apparently, why don't you come on? She just asked me, do I want her to come on and tell the story?
Yeah, let's hear it from her own lips.
Yeah, the whole story goes, we actually go out to this ghost town in New Mexico about four times a year, more or less, depending. And we had a ghost group from Arizona come out, and they wanted to do a hunt, and, we're telling history, who died in which building, blah, blah, blah. And I went around for the first half of the evening, and then I went to go watch my son, and my husband went around for the second half. We really hadn't gotten too much. There's no electricity in this town at all. In fact, they didn't have plumbing until about 1970s, okay? And so I turn around, and my husband, he's sitting there, he goes, come on, guys, give them something really good. I tell you what, if you give them something good, something spectacular, I'll have Heidi flash you her boobs.
Nice husband.
They got the highest EMF spike of the evening. Yeah, isn't he wonderful?
And so did something happen?
Yeah, highest EMF spike of the evening.
And so did you? Did you pull? Huh?
No. Well, I think it was my second or third trip out there. I remember it was actually in June. It was my third trip out there. It was our wedding weekend. We were getting married. And I turn around and I'm getting ready. I'm getting changed in the back room of this kind of public-ish building. I'm down to my chemise, and I look up, and there's like a cowboy leaning on the table, and he looks me up, looks me down. I kind of shriek, reach down, grab my blanket, pick it back up, and look, and he's not there.
Wow.
My husband comes busting in. I describe this guy going, I didn't see which way he went. He goes, no, the other door is locked, and I was just outside that front door. Nobody came out. And I described him. And my husband goes, yeah, you know who that was? And I go, no. And he goes, that's Russian Bill. Let me show you a picture. And he took me into the museum, and there is a picture of the guy. And he was actually hung about 100 years before. He was actually hung in the front room.
Really? Oh, that's an interesting story.
It made me very angry.
That he was peeping at you?
Yeah. Well,
he's got to have some fun after death.
That's right.
To have fun elsewhere.
Well, your husband tempted him, and he made that remark.
Right.
And then he didn't follow through, so...
It's interesting. The town has so much history. Their general merchandise store, which is my understanding, it burned down in 1997. There was actually supposedly a body buried underneath there.
What city did you say this was in?
It's called Shakespeare Ghost Town. It's actually 2 miles south of Lordsburg.
Hmm.
And
it sounds like an interesting spot.
It really is. It was actually Ralston. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Great Diamond Swindle. It actually
doesn't ring a bell.
New York Post. Well, basically, some guys seeded some ant beds up on a hill with raw diamonds from Africa, and we're trying to sell stakes in diamond mines out there. It was Wendell, and like I said, it actually made it to the New York, I want to say it was the New York Post, or the New York Times, I'm not sure. But I mean, it made it that far back east.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty much a boom town. I'm trying to pull the history, because it's actually my husband's love. I just kind of go out there a lot of the times, because my husband does.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I know for a fact that one gentleman was killed in the bottom of the general merchandise during Prohibition era. They were down there drinking and gambling. A fight broke out. They popped a guy upside the head with the bottle. He went cold. They kind of propped him up in the chair after the fight was over, checking on him occasionally. And one time they checked on him, they realized that he was actually dead.
Creepy.
And there was a train that ran through town, so they just kind of took his body out, laid him upon the tracks, and he was.
Oh, no.
His official death was listed death by train.
Oh.
So, but the real story is that he was killed in a fight.
Well, there's certainly
like
enough of violence to result in ghosts.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, there was even a death over an egg, over a stupid little egg. Back before the railroad came in, you know, everything had to come in through wagons and such, and they didn't have chickens. They really couldn't support chickens. The hotel, the woman that ran the hotel gave the last egg in town to her son. Another gentleman took great offense to this, went ahead and started name-calling the boy, who promptly got mad, ate his egg, went to his room, got the gun. Must have been his first gunfight because he emptied it and didn't hit the gentleman. The other gentleman got up, calmly put two shots in the boy, who was dead before he hit the floor. And it was all over an egg.
Wow. It has a lot of history, huh?
Yeah. And it's one of those, I mean, the stories there, I mean, of course, they have the typical, you know, the wailing woman and the woman in white, they have the typical stories, and then they
mm-hmm.
have like, you just
sounds like you have a
believe.
Little child there with you.
Yeah, I have a 2-year-old, and he's telling
yeah.
me to go somewhere, but he knows I'm working.
Uh-huh.
I just saw he got a hold of the marker, so I'm going to go ahead and drop back off and see what else
yeah,
he
have fun. Is. Thanks for sharing.
No problem.
Well, as I'll tell
Ken, have you been to that area she was talking about?
Yes, I've been to Shakespeare. It's quite an interesting little place. And I've been there once, but I've read and been told a good bit about it. It's about, it's about 75 or 80 miles from here.
So how far across the country do you get usually on your expeditions?
Well, we've been to Los Angeles a couple of times. We just got back from the BEA, and I collected a lot of stories while I was in New York.
And so are you putting together a book of New York ghost stories?
Well, I'm trying. The series is Spirits of the Border, and I'm trying to eventually do every state.
Big job, huh?
Yeah, because you'd be surprised how many ghosts there are wandering around.
No, I wouldn't. I would not be surprised.
In fact, I did the History and Mystery of the Lone Star State about Texas ghosts, and I just had to end it when it got almost 500 pages.
Yeah, it is amazing. Well, when you think of all the people who have lived and died, it's really not surprising how many are still kind of hanging out, especially when you have so many who've died in traumatic ways. Because, as you know, that tends to be the most, the biggest ghost maker.
That's true. And there are certainly, El Paso has a history of violence. In fact, we got one story from downtown. There were, I think, 5 people killed in 55 seconds or something like that. It was under a minute.
Wow.
And the people that were aiming at each other missed. These were innocent bystanders.
Yeah. You know, I have a little feature throughout my ghost books called Ghosts in the News. Did you happen to see in When the Ghost Screams, I have a little overview of an article that appeared in the El Paso Times in August 2004 about the library there, the El Paso Library.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I was down there hunting for some of the ghosts in the basement.
Oh, okay. So you were in on this when the librarian actually saw a soldier.
Not only has there been a soldier seen, there's been a nurse wearing a World War I nurse's uniform.
That in the article, and the captain.
Oh, yes, who reads magazines in the basement, yep. You see, that was the location of the original cemetery in town. And when, because the original Fort Bliss, or the original military post, it wasn't called Fort Bliss then, was located in the area where the library is now.
Yes, and that's what the article said, was that they found some skeletons beneath the library that they thought were Civil War skeletons.
Well, every time they do work down there, they find something. But I don't think the article explained properly how all that came about. When the government moved the military post to another location, they gave the land to the city as is. So when the city got ready to use it, they had to move all the bodies, so they hired the town drunks, paid them $5 a body to dig them up, take the marker, take them out to Concordia Cemetery, which in those days was quite a trip, and dig a new hole and put the markers back up and put them back in the ground. Well, this is Texas. By 11 o'clock, it's hot and the ground is hard. So they started moving just the markers.
Oh.
And then...
Very creepy. So that they got their $5 for moving the markers and left the bodies there where the area was built over.
That's right. But what makes it even more interesting is underneath the Plaza Theater, which was one of the biggest vaudeville type houses between the East Coast and the West Coast. And then it was silent movies, and then, you know, regular movies, and now after renovation, it's back. Well, if you go into the basement, to get to the bottom level of the basement, you have to walk quite a long ways because it kind of spirals down. At the very bottom, there's a little room about the size of a phone booth, and on the back wall, there are big planks that are held up by two metal brackets. Between those metal planks, you can feel a strong wind blowing. And that's an entrance to the underground tunnel system.
Huh.
As we were, one year I did tales, ghost stories from the plaza, and I told ghost stories there for, you know, three hours. And then when it was over, I'm exhausted, ready to go home, and everybody wants a ghost tour of the movie theater. So, because it's quite haunted. So we went to do the ghost tour. And we got to one point, and the guy doing the tour said, "Look at that wall right in front of you." I did. And he said, "You know, there's a bunch of Chinese workers buried in that wall. We just happened to work around them without knowing it, and then we went to expand this area and found them. And rather than dig up everything above it to move them out, we just left them."
Hmm.
So it definitely, it's a fascinating place.
It sure sounds like it.
We had something called, I call it Alligator Square, because there used to be live alligators.
Uh-huh.
Until one evening some sucker tried to go ride one. And
somebody tried to ride the alligator?
Yeah, and he wasn't happy about it.
The alligator or the guy riding him?
Well, the alligator wasn't happy about the attempt, and the guy riding him, or trying to ride him, wasn't happy about the alligator's response.
Did he get eaten?
No, but he got chewed on a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the they went ahead and made that area into, since it was kind of central to the city, they made it kind of like a little park, and a lot of the homeless sleep there in the evening. And underneath it, there are restrooms. But the problem is that when you go to use those restrooms, the strangest things happen. There are people who complain that they go in and there's somebody in one of the stalls, and you never hear anybody leave the stall. But when you come out after doing your business, the stall is open. Sometimes when you're looking in the mirror, you know, kind of primping before you leave, when you you see people behind you, but you turn around, there's nobody there. There's also a problem with time. Quite often, you think you've been in there 5 minutes, you've been in there 35 minutes. Sometimes you think you've been there 20 minutes, and you've actually been there 5 minutes.
Finally, really?
Yeah.
And then that's really fascinating. I haven't heard of such a thing before, and it seems to be some sort of a time warp.
Exactly. And finally, the city shut it up. And the metro station was right near there, so they put restrooms over to metro station. And now they have closed those down, because they're renovating the whole area and a lot of the buildings downtown as well.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the stories that I used to talk to the folks that were hanging out down there, you know, sleeping outside, and they told me some of the strangest stories. There was a hotel down there where a lot of people would go. More cattle were sold in the lobby of that hotel on a handshake than by contract anyplace else. And one evening, somebody, nobody knows who did it, nobody knows why it was done, somebody went and chained all the fire exits.
Really?
And the hotel caught on fire. And people, of course, couldn't get out. There was no ladder high enough in town at that point in time to evacuate everybody, so a lot of people jumped.
Wow.
And I talked to people who worked in that building just a few years ago. And they talked about hearing the sounds of people. They'd go in on the weekend to do their work. They'd hear the sounds of people wandering the halls. They'd go out and look and see folks in their nightclothes wandering up and down the hall. They'd smell the smell of singed wood.
Mm-hmm.
And one lady said that somebody used to come in her boss's office and sit in his chair every time she would work. Now, you had to go by her to get to his office, but she would hear people sitting in his chair because it had a very distinctive squeak.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is quite the town to come to if you want to have fun with ghosts.
It sure sounds like it. Yeah, maybe I'll, after I do another, finish my angel book, maybe I'll do another ghost book. So do you come across many people who tell you about angel encounters?
I've had a few people tell me. They don't call them angel encounters. Usually they'll call them, let me tell you about the strange thing that happened to me. And they'll tell me something that sounds very much like an angel.
Uh-huh.
The most recent book I did was Tales from the Night Shift. And, of course, we had stories in that about nurses who work nights seeing entities come to, they think, escort somebody who's died to wherever it is they're going.
Really?
Yep.
You think the nurses were ghosts or spirits that were just helping people find their way?
Well, the nurses that saw them, that's the only thing they can figure out, because routinely, in the case of this one particular lady at one of the nursing homes, they kept seeing this strange figure in and around her room. And they'd go check on her, she'd be okay. A night or two later, of course, she died. And you have to remember, a lot of people here are extremely religious and more than a little superstitious.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them firmly believe that they were watching a spirit coming to escort the lady home. Now, I'm trying to remember the specifics of some of the stories, but I've written so many, they all run together after a while.
I know what you mean.
But you're sitting there, you're on the night shift, you're probably a little drowsy to begin with, and you see a glowing figure walking down the hall. That tends to get your attention.
Oh, definitely. That would wake you up.
And a number of the hotels, a number of the hospitals, for example, have so many stories of the strange and the unusual that it's hard not to immediately think about that when you are dealing with trying to figure out some of these stories. In fact, one hospital's had so many peculiar things that until a few years ago, it was known as the Death Hospital.
Ooh, so who would want to check in there?
Well, that was it. They went to a great deal of effort to kind of rehabilitate the hospital.
I guess so.
Now, you've got When the Ghost Screams, Ghosts Among Us, and Coast to Coast Ghost. And then you've got your newest that I don't yet have.
She sent it two-day mail, so it should be getting there tomorrow.
Okie dokie.
Ghost in the Mirror, and I had so many cases of apparition seen in reflection that I decided to make that the theme of a book. And I find that when I interview people who've seen ghosts in reflection, that they invariably will describe it to me the same way. And each person will tell me that it usually works out this way. They're looking in the mirror, combing their hair or something, and they see in the reflection someone standing behind them.
Uh-huh.
They swing around to see who's there. No one's there. And then they look back in the mirror, and the figure remains caught in the reflection. And I think it's kind of interesting, you know, when you're interviewing people about ghosts or angels, you start to notice a pattern in the way people describe things. And
uh-huh.
You get a real sense of what is real and what is not. And I'm sure you've come across this too, that
oh, yeah.
You'll meet people who make things up.
Yeah.
And you start to be able to spot them because they tell you things that just do not make sense at all when compared to previous interviews, because the things they describe completely fall out of the normal pattern. I mean, occasionally you do get something, and you know you can just tell that the person's telling the truth, but there are these people that make up these outlandish things, and it just doesn't fit the pattern. For instance, I noticed that with ghosts, I've never come across anybody ever telling me about a ghost that appeared as a giant. Yet with angels, this is very, very common.
Hmm. Well, that's true. I've never had anybody tell me about a giant either.
Yeah, now when you talk about angels, it's a whole different thing. And I'm starting to really get a sense, after interviewing a lot of people about their angel encounters, of what it is they're seeing. And there's a distinct difference between an angel and just a regular ghost. I mean, like we talked about earlier, the ghost might be really helpful, but they seem to be a whole different kind of a thing. Well, I'd love to hear from people, anybody you come across that has had an angel encounter. If you'd like to ask them to email me, that would be great.
No, by all means, because angels are not really what I chase.
No, I know you don't, and I don't think you can chase an angel. It's a whole different thing. The angels come to us when we need them. It's not a ghost, for instance, somebody who's trapped here and seems to be hanging around the same spot. Is a completely different thing. The angels are spiritual beings who allow us to see them, it seems, at the moment that we need them the most.
Let's see. CatStar66, who's out of Australia. I saw a giant, but I was on... Musaka. So that makes
what?
She was on medication.
She was on medication. Well, did she think it was an angel?
Well, I thought it was a protective spirit.
Yeah, see, that's what people tell me. With the protective spirits, they often show up as giants. It's very, very interesting because in all the hundreds of people I've interviewed about ghosts, no one's ever said the ghost was a giant. But again and again and again, I'm getting the spiritual beings, the protectors, often manifest as giants.
Well, certainly a protective giant has its possibilities.
And I don't think it really even, you know, matters if it's an angel, if it's a spiritual being. I think that what we see, if we see them as a giant, it really doesn't matter if they're an inch tall or they're a giant. They're a spiritual being, and they're able to assist us because they have direct in with God. Whatever religion you are, whoever your God may be, this seems to be universal.
Well, CatStar66, I was trying to be courteous and say it was medication, and she said, no, it's the drink the shamans use.
Oh.
In other words, she was having a kite.
Aha. Well, and you don't know. I mean, sometimes encounters may just be a hallucination. What I like is to find encounters from people who are clean and sober at the time of the encounter and have credibility. And I'm not saying she doesn't. I'm just saying that the kinds of stories that I seek are from people who are thinking clearly at the time it happens.
Well, I got to talking with a senior member of a security force. Their company used to have the contract with the local hospital for... inmates that had terminal diseases, they would be the ones to transport them back and forth to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was dying of terminal cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought him into the hospital. Now, the hospital, even in those days, and this was 25 years ago, was shutting down, or portions of it were shut down. And the guy is... medicated to the eyebrows, and he's in his room, and they're sitting out in the hall, and they hear him yelling for him, and they go in, and he says, would you tell the people next door to keep it down, because I can't sleep. So they went next door, and the room was empty, and it showed no signs of having been occupied in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Back and told him, well, there's nobody there. And from the dust, nobody's been there. And he assured him that they had to be wrong. So this one happened two or three more times. And finally, the guards moved their chairs into the room. Now, everybody's kind of drowsing. It's, you know, the early hours of the morning. And suddenly they hear the party going on next door. They hear the pounding on the wall, the whole nine yards. And they go rushing next door, and of course, nobody's there. Now, as he walks out, the senior security guard I was talking to, as he walked out, he heard a lady in a room across the way yelling in Spanish for help.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and sticks his head in the door, and there's a little old lady in a bed, and the room is dimly lit, and he sees basically a mound of bedclothes. And he asked her what she wanted, and she said she needed help, so he went and got the nurse, who looked at her very strangely and said, what room was that again? And he told her, and she said, okay. Now, CatStar66 says, I think I'll shut up. I'm not credible anymore. No, you're very credible.
No, I wasn't saying that she wasn't credible. You said she was high as a kite, and I said the kinds of stories that I seek are ones from that happen, encounters happen when people are sober and are clear-headed. And I said it doesn't mean that she didn't have an encounter. It just the ones that I seek are the most credible.
Yep. So anyway, the group, they got the nurse, she went into the room, and the guard went back to what he was doing. And the next day, they hear the sounds of the party in the room next door. Again, always in the early hours of the morning, they go look. Of course, there's nobody there. He comes back out, and he hears a little old lady yelling for help again. And this time, he just goes to the nurse's station and says, that little old lady down there needs you. And she looked at it, and he said, she's waiting on you. And she said, no, you're wrong. Because we had to move her this morning. And he said, well, she's back because she's yelling for help. And she said, no, not possible. And finally, he grabbed her by the arm and literally drug her down the hall for her to hear the little old lady yelling for help.
Mm-hmm.
And she turns white as a sheet and refuses to go in the door. And she said, we moved her this morning because she died last night.
Ooh.
And he said, but you hear her yelling. And she said, yeah, and I'm not going in there.
Eerie.
Yep.
And very sad. Very sad if the little old lady is trapped there thinking she needs help.
Well, another thing that kind of he thought was puzzling, as he walked out of the room where he was searching for the party, two kids, laughing and giggling, walked by him and just going down the hall and disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is about, I don't know, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. Certainly too late for the kids to be up. And he goes to get a soda. And the kids are sitting by the soda machine. And he goes to the nurse, and he said, you know, I don't want to tell you all how to do your business, but do you think there ought to be children here at this hour? And she said, there are no children here. He said, yeah, they're down at the soda machine. She said, no, they're not. He said, yes, they are. I assure you they're there. I just left. She said, I'm telling you there are no kids in this hospital. Well, she finally went just to get him to shut up. And, of course, she didn't find any kids. However, there are a number of stories about those children being seen laughing and talking and literally having a good time at all hours of the day and night.
Uh-huh. Did anybody ever figure out who they were?
No, but they've been around. I talked to somebody who worked there back in the 60s. And the kids were seen even then, so.
Huh.
Now, and another story I was told, And in fact, it happened. I had been there, you know, looking at what was going on and taking photographs and talking to nurses. And I left for a couple of hours and came back. And when I walked back in, the CEO pulled me aside and he said, "You just missed him." I said, "Just missed who?" Well, remember I told you about Charlie who got crushed by the elevator?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was back in late 40s, early 50s. Now, I'd been gone about 15 or 20 minutes when a guy walks in, and you know how guys can, you know, kind of strut with their fingers behind their belt buckle?
Uh-huh.
And he's just basically strutting around. He introduces himself as he was a doctor, and he used to practice there. And, of course, none of these people would have known him from Adam, and they were polite to him. And the conversation came around to Charlie, and he said, "Oh, I knew Charlie very well." Now, the guy looked to be in his late 40s, early 50s. This was last year. Now, for him to be a doctor, or actually it was his residency, as I recall, he would have been in mid to late 20s in the late 1940s.
Mm-hmm.
And when they asked him who he was, he kept pointing at his belt buckle. Was a big Masonic belt buckle, very fancy. And there was no doubt from the conversation, at least in their mind, that this guy had been there in those days because he knew a lot of things that happened. And yet he wasn't near old enough to have been there.
Hmm.
And he left and said he'd be right back. And he went out the door, and I came off the other elevator. And when I went to see if I could find him, nobody knew anything about him. And he was not around.
Interesting.
But from the description he gave, he did know Charlie. And Charlie died in the crushed under the elevator.
Wow.
It's a strange world in which we live.
Yes, it really is.
And I don't know why I keep meeting them all.
Maybe because you're looking.
Now, that could be. Because certainly there are a lot of certainly odd people in this town. let's see. Liberace is high on life. Okay. Liberace is from Canada. We have listeners from all over the world.
Uh-huh.
In fact, most evenings we are somewhere north of 2 to 3 million people.
You have 3 million people listening?
On average, yeah.
What's that?
On average, yes.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Most of them just sit and listen. They don't actively take part, which is, of course, sad, but what the heck. At least they're listening.
Hmm.
And I simulcast on an internet television show, so... we got radio and TV running here.
Well, you're getting your word out.
Yeah, we're trying. If we can get you to come down here for a book signing, then we'll put you on TV.
Maybe one of these days, huh?
Well, there's more ghosts down here per square foot than most any place else in the country.
Yeah, it sounds like a very interesting place. So I just turned on my computer and... Oh, there. Okay, now I should turn it off because it's making noise. So that's you right now.
That's me.
Hi.
How are you? You need...
Okay, I'm going to turn that off because we're getting the you're probably hearing it over the phone.
Yes, if you'll cut off your speaker.
I did. I turned it off, but let's see. Well, sounds like you're a really busy guy. You got some more projects going, and you're doing your radio show. Is it nightly?
Yeah, 5 nights a week. I do 3 hours a night, 5 nights a week.
Mm-hmm. And who is the next guest tonight?
The next hour, I will be talking about some of the more interesting hauntings around the world.
Ah, well, I'll have to turn on and listen. I think we're in the next hour now, and I actually have to be somewhere pretty soon. So, will I be able to turn on the computer later and listen to?
Archive shows can be downloaded. Yes.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. But it was good to talk to you again, and keep your ears open for angel stories for me.
I will definitely do that. Now, what's your newest book again?
Well, the last one that came out was called Ghost in the Mirror, and you should be receiving that tomorrow because they sent it out by two-day mail. And the one I'm working on now is The Real Life Angel Encounters and Miracles, and that will be out in about a year.
Okay, well, there are definitely some stories of angels that folks have told me, which doesn't fit in with what I write about, so...
if you want to pass them on, that would be very kind of you.
I will definitely do that.
Well, you have a great night, Ken.
Same to you.
All right, we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Leslie Rule, and her mother is Ann Rule, who writes the true crime books. Leslie's written 50 articles in national magazines. She's written 4 books on the strange and the unusual, and we have true stories of victims who haunt called When the Ghost Screams. True Stories of Spirit Encounters, Ghost Among Us, Coast to Coast Ghost, Hauntings Across America, and of course, Ghost in the Mirror. Now, we are changing a lot of things. What is the video link? You go to kenhudnall.com and you'll be able to see me in all my glory. And in fact, we're going to do quite a bit more with the TV when we launch the new system. We will be doing, it'll be a member site. There'll be discounts on various products. We'll have the mugs and the T-shirts and jackets. And part of what we've been doing is getting a new fulfillment company. The one I was using wasn't getting the job done, which I have to apologize to quite a lot of people. I wasn't being made aware of the fact that there's not a lag, I understand, on Omega Television Network. The problem is, with the setup we have here, there's not a lot of activity on the monitor. We're going to have, backdrops and the whole nine yards and, dancing girls behind me and just all kinds of different things. And with the, right now, when an order is placed at kenhudnall.com or kenhudnallshow.com, it comes pole dancing. Well, as a matter of fact, I know a couple of girls from Czechoslovakia who could do it, so that might be called a Czech dancing, I guess. But we'll see if we can find some poles to dance behind me. From the puppy cam. No puppy cams here. Me no speak good Enish. Funny you should mention Enish. Somebody came to the front gate, because there's a courtyard around my house, and he was speaking Enish. He was trying to sell me a Persian rug made in West Berlin. So it was an interesting encounter. Did I buy it? No. We have some Persian rugs made in Persia. Now, when we, you know, we always look for stories of the strange and unusual. And sometimes it is people are leery about talking about the strange things that happen to them, for fear that somebody's going to think they're crazy. Now, the problem is not that they're crazy, because, of course, in most cases, they're seeing something that's not. I can afford the real Persian rug. No, I can't. We had a Persian actually give me the rug. Now, one of the interesting places that people talk about unusual things happening is at the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast. It's the actual house Lizzie Borden and her family lived in. Now, the mother was Abby Borden. Your brother brought your mother a rug from Iraq. Does that count? You know, sometimes they use those rugs to smuggle cocaine into the country. They get them into the... They get the cocaine down into the fibers, and then when they get it here, they hang it on the line, use a hose, and they get the cocaine to dribble down into a bucket. So, at one point in time, those rugs were a good buy. Now, Abby Borden and Andrew Borden were the parents of Lizzie. And even though the nursery rhyme says, Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. And when she saw what she was done, she gave her father 41. Well, number one, she was acquitted at trial. And number two, the mother only got 17 and the father only got 11. But no matter what the whack count might be. Oh, and before we go continue with Lizzie, I need to remind you that the first hour is brought to you by Marcello's Ristorante Italiano. Two locations, the original at 1360 Lee Trevino, and the second at 5380 North Mesa. A little slice of old Italy set down in the southwest. The food is... Well, now you can go, or you can call and ask for takeout. They can overnight it, wrap it up real good in a box, and send it. In fact, I've even got a gift coupon to Marcello's. So if you want to come on down, you can have a free dinner. Now, the murder took place. I talked to the manager about that Sunday, and they apologized and said sometimes the staff doesn't listen when they do their briefings. But you insist on your 10%. Now, the Bordens lived in Fall River, Massachusetts. And the house is got quite an interesting reputation. Now, the murder took place on August 4th, 1892. It was hot. In fact, it was around 100. It was about 11 o'clock in the morning. You couldn't talk him out of Mexico, so you're going on September 24th. Are you coming through El Paso? Because we're right here on the border. And you need to remember, they're shooting people down there. A direct flight. Anything to avoid me. I'm hurt. I mean, if you want to come down to El Paso, I'll even take you to The Garden, who is my sponsor for this hour. Well, this was about 11 o'clock in the morning. Andrew had come home for lunch, and he came a little early and stretched out in the sitting room to take a little nap. I'm driving through an avalanche zone to see you in BC in February. I'm totally avoiding you. Well, I understand. You have to remember I'm the sensitive sort. And while he was dozing, somebody axed him 11 times. And he was dead. Now, the killer then went up the stairs to the second floor guest room where Mrs. Abby Borden was doing her daily chores. She was making the bed in the guest room. And before she could turn to see who had walked up behind her, she got hit 17 times with an axe. Needless to say, she was in a bit of pain. She was found lying in a pool of blood. Now, the theory was that the victims knew their killer because there was no signs of a struggle, no signs of a break-in, nothing was stolen, nobody strange was seen in the neighborhood. Now, what the poem doesn't tell us is that there were two other people in the house at the time. There was Lizzie, and there was a housekeeper whose name was Bridget Sullivan. Now, that was evidence that implicated both of these young women. To give you an idea of how observant the Bordens were, even though the housekeeper's name was Bridget, the Bordens referred to her as Maggie, which was the name of the previous housekeeper. Now, that could be considered annoying. Now, Lizzie claimed that at 11 o'clock, she'd gone to the backyard to get some pears before heading up to the second floor of the barn to get some sinkers for a fishing trip she was planning for the following week. Now, having grown up on a farm, we didn't have any sinkers on the second floor of the barn. Now, of course, if you're going to sink, though, it's better to do it from the second floor than the first. Now, even in the barn, she wasn't but 50 or 60 feet from the house. And you would think if somebody was chopping up her parents, she might have seen something that might have given her an idea that perhaps something odd was going on. Well, she estimated she was outside for about 15 minutes. And during that 15 minutes, the killer snuck in, murdered her parents, and left during that period. And neither the housekeeper nor Lizzie claimed to hear anything while the murders were taking place. Now, the boarding house was good size, but it wasn't a mansion. And how two people be hacked to death without anybody hearing it is odd. Now, all the signs pointed to Lizzie, and with the housekeeper as a possible co-conspirator. And the motive? She and her sister stood to inherit the Borden fortune, which was considerable. Now, Abby was her father's second wife, and the girls were afraid that Abby was going to be given the estate for a lifetime. Investigators who came in found an axe head in the basement and found out Lizzie had burned one of her dresses in the fireplace on the day of the murder. Need to hook up my ham radio antenna. You get music out of your ham? My ham just sits there and looks at me. Now, there are those who believe that the murder and the surrounding events left a mark on the property. And a lot of people come simply because it is a murder house, and they want to try to communicate with the great beyond. Now, the young lady who was the manager noticed that some of her repeat customers seem to be magnets for the ghost. They have windows open and close on their own. Voices are heard, disembodied footsteps. In fact, a lot of EVPs have been captured to include one voice in the basement that yells, "Get out." It's also in the basement where a former owner of the house claimed to see a misty apparition, and where the manager experienced a ghostly encounter. She says she'd been working there for about a week when this happened. She'd gone to the basement, which is where the laundry room is, to switch some laundry from the washer to the dryer. When you get to the bottom of the steps, she turned left to go into the laundry room. As soon as she took a step forward, it felt like she'd walked into a walk-in freezer. She went two more steps. You'll get to it later, the kid's in the way. Why won't you hook him up to the antenna? Maybe to help his reception. And as soon as she reached the door to the laundry area, she felt very distinctly somebody run two fingers down her neck. She decided she could wait till later to do something with the laundry. Now, as I made mention of in talking to Leslie Rule, there are so-called paranormal investigators under every rock in this country. And there was a southeastern Massachusetts-based radio program, an investigative team, that had been involved in a number of paranormal events. And a couple of years ago, this investigator is walking through the house on a tour when he saw an old framed photograph levitate into the air, flip over, and then travel halfway across the room. On another occasion, he was filming one of the rooms when the camera turned itself about 45 degrees. Now, there was nobody else in the room, nobody that could have touched the camera. So one of the other investigators came in to realign the camera because they were watching it from the monitor outside the room. And before that investigator, who had just straightened the camera, could leave the room, the camera turned itself 90 degrees. Now, these investigators have made quite a number of trips to the bed and breakfast, and he's heard the sounds of children talking. You can't understand what they're saying, but you can tell they're talking. He's also heard the sound of a disembodied male voice. You know, there were other things that happened at that house that they go beyond Lizzie taking an axe and giving her parents all the whack. It seemed that the Fall River Daily Globe, which was a newspaper, did some research about the Borden property after the whacking. It seems there was another tragedy that happened. Now, what is this? I keep getting strange messages on my computer. It says, between 1839 and 1840, a cousin of Andrew Borden was involved in another tragic event. It seems she had some children, young children, and she was a tad annoyed with the children. So she threw three of them into a cistern. Now, a cistern is a large tank that collects rainwater, usually, and many of the older, more expensive houses, that's also how you got bathing water. You'd have a cistern on the roof that would collect water, and it would run down through the pipes, and you could use it for your shower and what have you. And then after throwing them in to drown, she jumped in herself. So you don't know if the haunting came from the bored parents or from the dead cousins. But it's interesting that you have to wonder if the Bordens might still be there wanting to make sure justice takes place. Because no one was ever ever punished for the killing of Abby and Andrew Borden. And it is a fascinating story. You're absolutely right. You know, there are strange stories associated with houses all over the country. If you ever go to Daytona Beach, Florida, go to 444 South Beach Street. Now this, yes, it is a bed and breakfast now. Falls River, Massachusetts. Now, the house built in 1871 at this address was once the destination of choice for the city's elite who look at interesting places to stay overnight. Members of the Wanamaker, the Gamble, and the Vanderbilt families quite often were regular visitors. As well as cattle barons, lumber mill owners, railroad moguls, it's called Live Oaks Inn, and it's now a bed and breakfast. It's got 14 guest rooms, a salon where you can hobnob with the hobnobbers, a breezeway deck, and a host of ghosts. Now, the Live Oaks Inn has long had a reputation of being a very haunted location. And the Daytona Beach Paranormal Research Group, which came into existence in 97, has conducted an investigation there, a rather thorough investigation. And there was a production company wanted to do a film there, and they contacted the paranormal group, and they made arrangements with the inn's manager. And shortly before filming started, the individual who told the story said he got a frantic call at about 3:30 in the morning from the woman who ran the inn, and she was staying in the caretaker building located just behind the inn, and there was nobody else around but her. You want to go to John Zaff's house and see his haunted objects? Well, that may be a new version of seeing his etchings. You never know. Well, she was lying in bed when she heard a voice. And she opened her eyes, and there was a shadowy figure of a man standing at the foot of the bed. Hey, I'm just supposing. Well, she got up and got gone. And the bedroom she was in was on the second floor of the caretaker's building. And she had to go down a flight of stairs. And as she went flying down the stairs, something pushed her. I need to have him on a show. Okay, I will do that. Heidi, can you make note of that address, and we'll run him down? Well, okie dokie. We will do our best. Well, the guy drove over, and the lights in that room were on and flickering. And the room had an eerie chill to it. Now, he got her calmed down and back in the bed. And he searched the place top to bottom, couldn't find a soul. So the next day he came back about sunset. And as he pulled into the parking lot, he saw a man standing in the window of the second floor kitchen. And he told the young lady who was managing the place, and she turned white as a sheet because there wasn't supposed to be anybody in the building. The only one around was her, or her fiancé was out he's very close to Lorraine Warren. I thought she was dead. Well, he can talk Amityville. Okay. Well, he bolted up the stairs and went down the hall to the upstairs kitchen, and the door was locked. And right behind him was the manager, and she had the keys, and there was nobody in the room, but you could smell cigar smoke, and one of the gas burners was on full blast. Well, they shut off the gas and checked all the rooms on that floor, and when they got to room number 12, the manager just, oh, Ed is dead, not Lorraine. Poor Ed is dead. I'm sorry to hear that. I read books about their investigations. I knew somebody was dead. But she said she had just made all the beds that morning. And yet in room 12, somebody had rumpled the pillows and the blankets. They went to room 14. When they walked in, the door slammed shut behind them. The TV turned on. The phone began to ring. Now, the phones went through a switchboard. There was no outside lines. And if there's nobody sitting at the switchboard, the phone in the room can't ring. So that disturbed her. And at the top of the stairs as they started down, they noticed that all the pictures on the west wall were just a little bit off-centered, which was a common occurrence at that place. They straightened them out. And tried to figure out what could have caused them to tilt. Of course, they never did. Now, the following evening was when the film crew got there. And they split up into teams of two. And started moving through the various locations that had been given to them as paranormally active. And during the time they were there, there were two phantom phone calls to room 14. During one of the calls, they heard a growl over the phone. In room 12, there was a rocking chair that rocked back and forth on its own. And they could hear a small child's voice singing nursery rhymes. And they heard the wrought iron bed frame squeak, as if someone had sat or laid down on the bed. Now, this was all recorded. It wasn't somebody said, I heard. And at the same time, they also documented a temperature drop. In room 9, the ceiling fan kept turning itself on and off, even after the circuit breaker to the room was flipped off. Those in the kitchen on the second floor smelled cigar smoke. And one had a headache so severe that she became nauseated and had to leave. Well, by 2:30 in the morning, everybody was tired. So they took a little break, went out on the patio, and sat down. And a couple of guests had checked into them to the hotel. And while they were sitting there, one of the guests, that's just 2:30 in the morning, remember, came down to the front desk, fully dressed, and demanded his money back. And of course, the manager said, well, what's the problem? He said he and his wife was upstairs packing, and they were going to get the hell out of there. They'd been sound asleep, and they woke up to see a clown standing over the bed, staring down at them. A clown. Well, I've known a lot of clowns in my time, but none of them have stood over the bed and stared at me. Well, the manager said, would you please describe the clown? 6 feet tall with a white painted face, huge glowing red eyes, painted red lips with rotted teeth. A blue and white clown suit. And long fingers that wiggled out at the couple as they laid there. Clowns are evil. Hates downs. Oh, hates clowns, I'm sorry. Well, at least he didn't drive the clown car into the room. He could have brought a whole army stuffed in that car. And then the guy said, and then the clown vanished. Now, I don't know what kind of games you're playing here, he said, but I paid good money to stay here and don't appreciate these kinds of tricks. Now, if you ever watched the TV series Bones, the FBI agent once shot a clown for clowning. Now, it was April the Fool's Day, that particular day, so the manager agreed to stop clowning around. Well, let me say this about that. If you see a clown, put him down. Well, the manager tried to calm the guy down and gave him his refund. His wife appeared and said, "Don't worry about the damn refund. I just want to get the hell out of here." Now I'm going to have nightmares about you dressed as a clown terrorizing me. Well, just put this thought in your mind. Me as a clown, standing over the bed, just staring down at you, looking solemn and clownish. Of course, if you hear a motor coming up the hall, that's me in the little clown car. That's when the manager finally said that the other guests that had been staying there, you know, April Fool's is a big vacation day in Florida. Well, the other guests had left because the faucet in their room kept turning on by itself. Well, the guy who was telling the story, the great ghost hunter, went up to the room that the people had just left and opened a door and peered in, and he swore he could smell grease paint. The room was 103 degrees. It was warm. And every photo he took of that room had a red, misty blob hanging directly over the bed. And Liberace, one thing for you to remember. You go in your room, you're going to change to go someplace, you open the closet door, and there's Clowny. You know, I don't use the closet, okay? Or the boogeyman's in there. No, the boogeyman and Clowny cannot share a space. You got one or the other. Now, of course, the clown is under the bed. Ah, so when you put your feet on the floor, it reaches out and grabs your ankle. Hey, that could excite you. You never know. That's why I make the dog sleep beside the bed. The clowns and dogs don't get along. The clown can get them first. If you got a 2 or 3 year old around, you tie a rope around its waist and you let it go in the room first, and you put a little a sinker on the line, so kind of like when you go fishing. And if you pull back a rope and there's nothing there, it just took your bait. You try again. If you got more than one kid, it works. I'm laughing out loud. Well, excuse me. I know some folks who do that at the cemetery. They started out with 6 kids and they're down to 4. And it's doing great for the food budget. Well, you only get rid of the excess. That's true. All you need is an air and a spare. Well, after all this happened, the intrepid investigators left. But they came back later in the day for more investigating. And the head investigator started a room-by-room tour of the property. With a psychic and a film crew. Now, they started in the actual inn itself, and the psychic was giving impressions of who was haunting it and why. Have you seen those new fancy lights? And for under the bed. Well, now you can throw the light under the bed and see what happens. I knew a kid in school who was positive there was something lurking under his bed. And so one evening, he threw a M80 under the bed. This was about midnight. The whole house was asleep, and he knew he heard something under the bed. So he lit it and threw it under the bed. Of course, it went off, and it disturbed the entire household. And his father was not a happy camper. I've seen on TV and more.com Betty Funbettel Wadawadam. Okay. Well, you know, if you look under the bed and you see it looking back at you, at least you know what you're dealing with. The red one is kind of creepy or trashy, depending on how you look at it. But it's trashy only if you hang it in the window. But you can actually make money on the side with it, but that's neither here nor there. At the top of the stairs, the psychic said there was the spirit of a young girl who sang nursery rhymes and played pranks on the guests. And she said the little girl liked to turn no red lights or Tide boxes in this house. Uh-huh. Well, that's one way to get the clown out from underneath the bed. So they went down to room 9. The phone rang, and of course the psychic answered it, and all they heard was static. And she offered to help whatever spirit was on the phone. And suddenly she jerked the receiver away from her ear, and they heard a deep growling voice on the phone, and the room got very cold. And on the second floor in that kitchen, the psychic said she found the spirit of a man who smoked cigars and liked to start fires with them. Well, as they left the main building and locked up behind themselves, Only 34 days until his first visit home, not that I'm counting. Are we talking about Clowney or somebody else? Because Clowney does not send messages ahead. Oh, okay. Now, one of the film crew looked back at the window to the kitchen on the second floor and said, "Well, who's that? I didn't think anybody else was in the building." And they looked up and saw a woman standing at the window, and they went back. The door wouldn't open. I wonder if there's clowns in Afghanistan, deep thoughts. No, Biden went back to Washington, so there's no more clowns in Afghanistan. Now, the psychic couldn't open the door, but anybody else had tried, and it just opened right up. And the room was cold as an icebox. And as the film crew entered, a rocking chair that was sitting in that room began to rock. And they heard footsteps on the stairs that went up to the attic. So they went rushing around. And they walked up the narrow stairway to the attic, and they heard low, muffled singing. And upstairs, one of the individuals flicked on his flashlight and caught. In fact, several of them saw it. The figure of a woman walked through the wall to the attic. Well, they went down the main staircase to the bar area of the restaurant. And the psychic went into a trance and talked about secret meetings that used to take place in a back room. And no one knew what kind of secret meeting they were talking about, but she said they had a ring, a book, a symbol, and these things were present at all the meetings. And they heard glasses clinking together as if people were having a toast. And then somebody noticed that the bottles of liquor that were behind the bar when they had first came in were now sitting on the bar. Well, the individual who was kind of orchestrating this thing was especially fascinated by what the psychic just said about a little girl being the one that tilts all the pictures in the hallway. So they decided to see if they could catch her footprint, so they took a couple of large garbage bags and laid them down and covered them with flour. Straightened all the pictures and went downstairs. Well, they came back in an hour or two and the pictures were all cattywampus again, and there, believe it or not, in the flour on the garbage bags were three small footprints. Well, after this, the manager kind of got the impression that the ghosts weren't going to leave, so if you can't beat them, join them. So she started advertising a haunted in and has done quite well. Never can tell. I know a lot of places think that folks do not like ghosts and hotels, but there are other places, well, there's no doubt in my mind that they ghost attract guests. Kind of like a peacock to honey. Now, this hour is brought to you by The Garden, 511 Western, the place at Union Depot. Now, Union Depot is quite haunted, and I suspect those warehouses that are being converted into restaurants and nightclubs also have their own permanent guest. Now, The Garden's menu is a bit eclectic. Everything from sushi to outstanding hamburgers. Need to go by, and if you do, tell them you heard about it on the Ken Hudnall Show, and I'll appreciate it. Now, Monterey, California is an interesting place. It's not the easiest place to went to. I once flew there from Orange County, and I had to take a bus for 40 miles. I was on two different airlines, and then had to take a taxi. And it's not a couple 300 miles. It was just a hard place to get to. It's on the Monterey Peninsula. And it was, the Monterey Hotel is a hotel that's haunted by a ghost they call Fred. Fred the Ghost. He was had been an employee. And he's a helpful ghost. He's a repair ghost. Now, on this particular evening, it was after 10 o'clock, on Alvarado Street, which is the 2,800 kilometers from you. Well, it's an interesting place. It's like stepping back to 1959. And Alvarado Street, which is the street that the hotel is located on, that kind of calmed down a little bit. It was raining. And the young lady was telling the story was a bit restless, unable to sleep. So put on a raincoat and walked several blocks into the historic district and got back to the hotel, tired, relaxed, ready for bed. Decided to catch up on the local news, so she turned on the TV and got a lot of nothing. The screen remained black. Now, she'd been in hotels quite a number of times, and she's aware of the fact that sometimes in the need to use wall plugs for vacuums, maybe to unplug the TV. You're not leaving, I hope. So she went to see if perhaps it was unplugged, and it wasn't. Now, sometimes the front desk has people on call to fix things like that. So she picked up the phone to call the front desk and didn't even get a dial tone. So after trying several times, she finally gave up and got dressed again and stepped out into the hall and saw a man in a janitor's uniform standing just down the hallway by an ornate mirror. Now, there was just something about him. It was a little bit off kilter, but she needed help, so she asked him if he worked there, and he nodded, and she said, "Nothing is working in my room. The TV and the phone are on the fritz. The, I need some help." So he walked down the hall toward her, and she led him into the room, and the moment they stepped inside, the temperature dropped. And she said the heat must have quit too. She said the view from this room is wonderful. I hate to change. Any chance you can fix this stuff? And he nodded and walked over to the thermostat. And after a minute or two, the temperature went back up to where it was comfortable. And he walked over to the TV and he put his hand behind it and tapped on the back of it a couple of times. And suddenly, a crisp, bright picture appeared. And he smiled, and she said, "Now, if you can fix the phone, we're in business." So he picked the receiver up and put it to his ear and listened, and then he smiled at her, and even from where she's standing, she could hear the dial tone. So she said, "You fix that too?" And he nodded and started for the door, and she said, "Well, let me give you a tip for your service." And he looked at her and he frowned, and before she could say anything, he was out the door. Well, this is one of those hotels that has a complimentary breakfast in the lobby, and she was down there early, enjoyed some of the pastries and had some hot chocolate. And she told the desk clerk about the helpful handyman who repaired all the things that weren't working in her room, and she said, "You got a real jack of all trades there. I hope you all pay him well." And the clerk just looked at her. She said, "We didn't have anybody like that working here last night." Now she said, "Well, he was dressed in a tan janitor's uniform," and he shook his head and he said, "That must have been Fred." She said, "Fred, well, you just told me there was nobody working last night." And he smiled and he said, "Well, Fred's our resident ghost. He was the handyman / janitor here years ago. He's been known to play pranks on staff, but to guests, he is extremely helpful." And then when he said that, it dawned on her what had seemed so strange about the janitor's appearance last night. He was standing by the mirror And yet it just dawned on her that she had not seen his reflection. And he was standing there as if he was waiting on her to call him. Now, another haunted location that I've had occasion to drive by is actually located in Bisbee, Arizona, and it's called the Inn at Castle Rock. Now, there are several hotels and bed and breakfasts scattered all over Bisbee. It's an old mining town. But the inn certainly has a reputation. It was built in the 1890s as a boarding house for miners, and since the mines have gone the way of the dodo, it's now become a bed and breakfast, and it's one of the few pet-friendly places where tourists can stay. Now, the big mine in Bisbee was the Copper Queen, and it made fortunes for its owners. Tremendous fortunes. And one of those miners, after a hard day down in the tunnels, came back to his room, laid down on the bed, and died. Now, that room is today called the Return to Paradise room, and there are two beds in the room. One is a single and one is a double. And there's a number of people that have said if you sleep in the single bed, you can feel your toes being tweaked during the night. According to legend, it's the dead miner that will tweak your toes. He doesn't really like having other people in his room. Now, the room directly across the hall also has an interesting reputation. There was a young lady who stayed there one Christmas and New Year's. She and her cat, Morris. This is called the White Eagle Room, and it's directly across the hall from the Return to Paradise Room. Now, Morris was fascinated by that room, not the least bit afraid in spite of the ghost. Whenever he could get into the hallway and the door to that room was open, he'd make a dart in, and if the door was closed, he'd try to squeeze under the door, and he was continually meowing. Well, it was December 29th. Real cool. And the door to that room was open, and Morris made a break for freedom. And he dove under that single bed and got back up against the wall where it couldn't be easily gotten to. And no amount of coaxing or pleading worked. He was there to stay. Finally, the manager, who happened to be up on that floor, got down on hands and knees and crawled under that bed and grabbed the cat by the scruff of the neck and took it back to its own room. Now, you know, I've told you before that ghosts travel. So the woman, Morris's owner, was wondering if perhaps the ghost followed Morris back to the White Eagle room. She was in that state of kind of being half asleep when a shimmering light appeared at the foot of the bed. Now, at first she thought her eyes were playing tricks on her. It was an illusion. And finally, after rubbing her eyes and blinking a few times, she realized that what she was seeing was an apparition. It was the size of a human, but it was more of an oblong shape, just hovering, and eventually it disappeared. Now, one of the rooms is called the Tasmanian Room, and there was a guest staying there, and he had a poltergeist experience. And he talked about that experience on several travel-related websites. And this prompted a soldier getting ready to deploy to Iraq to make a reservation to come stay there before he left. Now, the room that he wanted to stay in, the Tasmanian Room, was already booked. So he couldn't get that room, but they got him another room quite close to Tasmanian Room, and the owner of the hotel was certainly hoping the ghost didn't disappoint the guy because he really wanted to see a ghost. Well, apparently the ghost were aware of the young man's desires because they did not disappoint him. In fact, they made appearances to everybody in the place. One guest felt somebody watching her all night. From what I understand, it was well worth watching. Another one claimed that he was pinned down on his bed and couldn't move. A third guest, who was up on the thing on the second floor, saw a shadow walk down the hall and walk right past him. Now, one of the ghosts that haunts the hotel is a female dressed in Victorian garb. And she'll just walk up and down the steps and up and down the hall. A lot of the employees have encountered these, I'd like to call them permanent guests. And a maintenance man had a run-in with two female apparitions dressed in old-fashioned attire. Another employee saw a little boy dressed in period clothing. The cook has reported that the pots and pans will move all over the kitchen. And whenever he gets tired of it, he'll ask the ghost to stop, and they do. The manager looks at these ghosts kind of like protective spirits. They've even caught them in appearing in some of the photographs that guests take. It's always fascinating to when a ghost makes your acquaintance. Now, there was a young man who wanted to stay at a place called the U.S. Hotel. That's located in Hollidaysburg, Pennsylvania, which is within spitting distance of Philadelphia and Gettysburg. And though Gettysburg is quite a haunted location, primarily because of the battle. But the U.S. Hotel is interesting. The young man and a friend of his have been staying at the U.S. Hotel, and there's interestingly enough, both of them wound up ill. The young man telling the story had heart fibrillations, which required him going to the emergency room. Now, both young men had been in excellent health when they went to stay at the most haunted hotel in Pennsylvania, which is a U.S. hotel. But at the identical time, 3 days after they left there, both were extremely ill. And after getting out of the hospital, the one that had the heart fibrillations looked at the film he had taken while at the hotel and realized that their illnesses had everything in the world to do with the fact they had stayed at that particular hotel. Now, both of these individuals were a little skeptical about the existence of ghosts. The young man whose heart had acted up could walk into the most haunted cemetery in the country and nothing would happen. And his friend, who had the severe stomach cramps, was a skeptic. Now, both wanted to prove once and for all, one way or the other, ghost or no ghost. And on the second floor of this hotel, there had been an event. Legend said it was a man with an axe murdering a woman, but there were several other unique events, and they went to see for themselves. Then they spent a couple of hours wandering around and taking video and photos and just kind of feeling for the vibes, so to speak. Now, even to a skeptic, the U.S. Hotel is a bit on the creepy side. The upper floors were in the midst of a remodeling project, while the restaurant was considered cozy. Most of the rooms looked like they were frozen permanently in the mid-1980s. They felt old and untended, unlived in. You know how a room that's not been used for quite some time can get a feeling of emptiness? This is exactly what they were feeling. One room on the third floor, the door refused to budge. It was definitely stuck. But these were big, strong young men, and they forced it open. And after that, it worked perfectly. It didn't stick again. Now, the owner's granddaughter was giving them the tour of the hotel. And they recorded her on video talking about that room, and they said it's one of the more active rooms in the hotel, she said. It's known as the Dying Mother Room. There was a woman lying on the bed dying, and her daughter was curled up in the closet. And the door jams a lot. And there was one ghost that choked a man to the point that he passed out. And the little girl had contact with one of the ghosts and said he smells like smoke and rotten meat, and he followed her home once. And in another room where they recorded the owner's granddaughter, she said, Alice is an older woman who lives in this room and who's dying of some sort of stomach illness. And a lot of times when people walk into that room, they get ill with stomach problems, and one of the young men did. So when you go to a haunted hotel, you just need to be cautious, I guess you could say. Keith is having a similar gentleman. Okay. I'm easy. You know, if you've ever been to New Hampshire, there's Wentworth by the Sea. Very stately looking hotel. It's large. Built in the late 1800s. And most people refer to it simply as the Wentworth. And it's got ghostly appearances by former owners. Guests, staff, servants, even a few presidents have shown up there. Now, the hotel was built in 1874 by a couple by the name of Campbell. Sarah and Charles Campbell. Now, Sarah's parents were fairly wealthy, and they owned the land upon which the hotel was built. The hotel cost $50,000 to build, which was a fortune. And Sarah's cousin financed the hotel. His name was Daniel Chase. He was the rum tycoon. But in 1877, because of some business reversals, he filed for bankruptcy and the Campbells lost the hotel. Now, a few years later, Chase made a second fortune. But he had nothing more to do with the Wentworth. Though after his death, interestingly enough, he's been seen to haunt the place. He's been seen quite often around the front stairs of the hotel. He's dressed in period costume, so folks mistake him for a staff member or a servant because he wears an apron. Now, interestingly enough, the apron he wears is part of his Masonic garb because he was the Masons' first high priest in Somerville, Massachusetts. If you're wondering what a Masonic apron is, there's a portrait of George Washington laying the cornerstone of the Capitol, which has been lost, but he's wearing his Masonic apron. Now, the Wentworth finally sold in 1879. Charles Campbell was kept on as the winter caretaker and night watchman. And even today, you can see him at the back of the hotel. He's the one with the handlebar mustache. And sometimes he has a shovel in his hand. Nobody really knows what he's supposed to be digging up or burying. There is a story that there's buried treasure around the Wentworth. In 1882, the local newspaper reported a party of men searching for gold at Little Harbor, which is between Campbell's house and the Wentworth Hotel. There was a treasure map found indicating the location of three chests of gold and a barrel of silver. Yo-ho-ho and a barrel of silver. But the map indicated both a bridge and a stone marker that by 1882 were no longer in existence, and nobody really remembered where they were. By the late 1880s, the Wentworth was one of the premier hotels in the Northeast. But during the 20th century, it kind of faded into obscurity. Now, the person telling this story spent many summers as a child, as a guest at the Wentworth. Actually played hide-and-seek with the ghost on the hotel's top floors. It was to this young lady, who during the 60s spent quite a number of summers there with her family. The Wentworth was just a huge, slightly decrepit castle that had concealed staircases, dusty, unused rooms. And she'd go off to explore the hotel. Sometimes she'd follow the hotel staff as they went about their jobs, and she really liked to wander around on the upper floors. Well, one morning it was dark. There was a thunderstorm going on. And she noticed a woman wearing a traditional maid's uniform, the dark dress, the black hose, a white apron, and a small white cap. The young girl thought the outfit looked a little dated, but kind of like the outfits you'd see discussed in novels of the Victorian era. So she was curious as to what this particular maid was doing, so she followed her through the corridors on the third floor and watched as she climbed a narrow staircase that very few people seemed to realize it even existed. And then she slipped up the stairs behind her, silent as a mouse. Well, she found that she was up on a floor of rooms that didn't appear to have been used in a long, long time, and finally realized they had once been the servants' quarters. A lot of the older houses, especially those with servants, had the servants' quarters up in what we would call the attic. Most had peeling wallpaper, and those that had any furnishings in them at all had thin cot wrapped in a musty sheet, and sometimes it'd be a wooden chair. Well, she could hear the rustle of the maid's dress as she went down the hall, so she followed that sound, but when she peered around each doorway, the room was always empty. She couldn't find the maid. Finally, she decided that the echoes caused by the plaster walls and the hardwood floors were making it hard to track the sound. And finally, she saw the maid's back as she entered a bedroom near the end of the hall, and a little spooked by the silence, the girl charged down the hall, determined to catch her, but when she went into the room, she skidded to a halt because it was as empty as the others. And she noticed the hardwood floor was thickly covered with dust and dirt, but she only saw one set of footprints, and that was her own. How was the maid getting about without leaving any tracks? Later that day, still puzzled by what she had seen and hadn't seen, she told her younger brother what had happened. And there were two other children that sometimes played with the hotel, so they all found the stairs to the fourth floor and went up. Well, they were at the bottom of that unused staircase. And just as she talked about the maid, she glanced up the staircase, and there went the maid by the top of the stairs. They all ran upstairs, but there was nobody there. Now, it was still daylight enough that they could see, and they could see just one set of footprints on the carpet that lined the hall. And those footprints were too tiny for an adult. And then it dawned on them. They had seen a ghost. Now, this young lady over the years many times has seen ghostly servants on the third and fourth floors at Wentworth. But there's been other ghosts seen as well, especially in the first floor ballroom. Now, these ghosts are usually seen late at night, and they're translucent and elegantly dressed. And while some are seen to dance, others ship champagne. Now, the young lady telling the story said when she went on Disney's Haunted Mansion attraction a number of years later, those translucent dancers that you can see as you take the ride are exactly what she had seen at the Wentworth Hotel. Not the same identical figures, but the effect was the same. Others who've seen the Wentworth Ballroom ghost have reported seeing former presidents such as Teddy Roosevelt and Franklin. Some have identified actors like Marilyn Monroe, usually in the hallway heading for the hotel's luxury shops. In 2001, the Wentworth was renovated, and the young lady who told the story went back for another stay. When she got out of her car in the parking lot, standing in a window on the fourth floor was a figure. Now, it could have been a worker, of course, but in her mind, it was one of the ghosts who kept a little girl amused so many years before. You know, there are many forgotten cemeteries around the country. Capstar, I'm sorry to see you go. In this particular cemetery, you might call it a family cemetery. It's set well back in the woods. And the young lady who wanted to explore it did so one cold November day in 83. She wasn't but 12. And to a 12-year-old, dark woods are places to be explored. And her mother took her and a friend through the woods of Dennis, Massachusetts. And there was an arched wooden bridge that led to the Cape Playhouse grounds. Now, this is a place that they had been to many times, but this was not where they wanted to go to on this particular day. This particular day, they wanted to explore. So they saw a path running perpendicular to the old Hall Cemetery, which is a tiny family plot right in the middle of these woods. And as she went by, she glanced into the cemetery where tombstones are decorated with skulls and wings dating from the late 1600s. And she saw a thin woman in dark Puritan attire walking among the graves. And she wore a long dress and her gray hair curled back in a bun, and most oddly, the young girl realized she could actually see right through her. And she stopped and got her friend's attention and said, "Look." And when they all looked over, there was no one there. Later on, a friend of hers, a schoolmate, told her of her encounter at the Hall Family Cemetery. When she heard a woman's voice, a very close voice, saying hello, and she spun around and felt the voice had called from very close to her. There was no one there. Now, in southern New Hampshire, which is a small, relatively small state, there are quite a number of spooky sites. And one of the spookiest excuse me, hiccups. It's called the Gilson Road Cemetery. And there's been so much ghostly activity seen in that cemetery that in 2001, the city lowered the road in front of the cemetery to prevent accidents because motorists were seeing strange things behind those stone walls and they were having accidents. Now, the young lady who visited the cemetery expected to find something definitely out of the ordinary. But she was disappointed to find just an ordinary old New Hampshire cemetery, a dozen or so headstones dating back to colonial days, a few newer ones in some open area. And then she spotted an opening in the cemetery's northeastern wall. Now, there were a few odd customs, I guess you could say. Such an opening in early American cemeteries indicated the presence of sinners buried just outside hallowed ground. So if you're looking for ghosts, start there. Well, it was starting to get dark, but she was busy examining the inscriptions on the various headstones. One said, "Prepare for death and follow me," and she got to one grave and was suddenly surrounded by a wall of frigid air. Suspended right above the stone marker that said Joseph W. Gilson. She said her hands felt like she was reaching into a freezer. And then she took photographs of that headstone. And when she looked at the pictures later, there was a strange mist around the oldest headstones in the cemetery. Especially around the headstone of Rufus Lawrence. And it could have been her imagination, but she began to feel hostility from the northeast corner. Now remember, that was the sinner's area. And in that area, coffin-shaped depressions in the ground, which were caused by the decomposition of the wooden caskets, showed that there were quite a number of unmarked graves. And on chilly nights, there are many people who have been there who say that heat emanates from some of those depressions, as if a living body filled the area beneath the ground. Now, the woods around that cemetery are populated with chipmunks and squirrels and almost any other type of small animal you can name. But sometimes, for no apparent reason, the area will become totally quiet immediately before the occurrence of some type of paranormal event. And that's when people see ghostly campfires and torches moving through the woods. And that's when the cemetery's infamous hooded figure appears. Now, over the last 30 or 40 years, people have encountered a very unusual apparition at Gilson Road Cemetery. It's a tall figure, well over 6 feet, and it emerges from the dark from the woods behind the cemetery. And sometimes it's been seen to actually leap over the back wall. And sometimes it comes through that opening in the northeast corner of the cemetery. According to the witnesses who've seen it clearly, The figure wears a hood that conceals its face and normally is silent. Though sometimes it has been known to shout at people on occasion. It chases people out of the cemetery and it will stop only when it reaches the front wall of that cemetery. And then it will vanish. So you need to ask yourself, what happens to those that can't outrun the hooded figure? And there have been some. No one knows. Now the cemetery is wooded on three sides. And around noon each day, if you happen to be in that cemetery, you'll sense figures creeping through the woods. And those who've seen or gotten a good look at those figures, they often clothe in native garb such as buckskin loincloths. One individual saw a hooded figure standing no more than 50 feet away. And he walked behind a tree and was no longer there. You know, there are few records about Gilson Road Cemetery. And in fact, most of the people buried in that cemetery aren't mentioned in any census or civil records of the era. It's as if they were forgotten, perhaps on purpose. The city records are sparse, but local folklore certainly has some explanations for the hauntings and other strange activity in and around Gilson Road Cemetery. According to one story, there were rival American Indian tribes who had a battle in that general vicinity. In fact, warriors from the two tribes would travel hundreds of miles to fight in that particular area. Following one massacre in that region, a shaman reportedly embarked on a killing spree. And fearing that he might, if they killed him, his spirit might come back to seek retribution, they imprisoned him on a small island in a swamp. And during a drought some years later, the swamp actually dried up. The shaman could have gone back to his people, but he preferred to stay there. He was quite happy. And from there, he could continue killing hunters and the unwary without detection. There's another legend that says there used to be a farmhouse on Gilson Road at that location that burned to the ground one night and killed everybody inside. Soon afterwards, another family bought the land and built another house, and it also burned to the ground. Everyone died. And when this new family was buried at that location, that's when Gilson Road Cemetery actually was formally created. And the stone walls around Gilson Road Cemetery, the same stone walls that surrounded that colonial farmhouse. Could the rampaging shaman be the cloaked figure that people have reported? Could the heat rising from those coffin-shaped depressions be a replaying of the heat that came from the fires that killed two families. It's interesting that a cemetery would exist and there'd be absolutely no history of it. Some things are hard to explain. Now, if you happen to live in the El Paso area, the sponsor of this hour is a place you should certainly check out. It's Golden Corral, 7420 North Mesa. Justin and his staff put on a spread that will absolutely knock your eyes out. There's more food than you can possibly eat. You can take your whole family there for a sumptuous repast and not have to get a bank loan to pay the bill. They've got meat, fish. They got a huge salad bar. They got a dessert bar that will keep anybody occupied and happy. And at 4 o'clock, 4 p.m, each day they have oceans of shrimp available. It's their legendary endless dinner buffet. They have shrimp scampi, popcorn shrimp, stuffed tortellini, crispy panko shrimp, linguine with lemon herb butter sauce, buffalo shrimp, baked fish topped with shrimp and lemon herb butter sauce, seven seas shrimp salad, golden delicious shrimp, and a coconut shrimp. Go in and tell him you heard about it on the Ken Hodnell Show, and in spite of what Heidi is saying, I am assured by the manager you will get a 10% discount. 10-10. You know, another haunted city is San Diego, California. And in San Diego is the Whaley House, reportedly one of the most haunted houses in the United States. But few people are aware up a Lost Label Ruts. Sorry to see you go. A mere 2 blocks away, some of the area's oldest ghosts are said to roam the cemetery in which they're buried, as well as the road some of them are buried under. Now, this is on San Diego Avenue in Old Town. In fact, it's the second oldest cemetery in San Diego, El Campo Santo, the Holy Field. Was originally created to serve as the final resting place of the city founders, and records state that from 1849 till 1897, almost 500 people were buried in El Campo Santo. And yet, if you visit that adobe wall cemetery, you won't find but maybe 100 markers. Now, less than 30 years after El Campo Santo was opened, it became neglected and weed-infested, as many cemeteries do. In fact, some of the graves were even desecrated. There were legends of some of the bodies being buried with wealth. So some of the families decided to move the bodies of their dear departed to better-kept cemeteries. And in some cases, the tombstones were left behind while the bodies themselves were moved. And sometimes neighboring grave sites were inadvertently disturbed while some of the bodies were being exhumed for movement. So over time, it became difficult to identify who was buried where. And then they built a horse-drawn Street Railway along Old Town's Main Street in the late 1880s, and that caused further destruction of some of the remaining tombs. Because they ran the railway line straight through the cemetery. Some graves were found and some weren't. In 1933, there was an attempt made to stake out the cemetery grounds. And that's when the current cemetery walls were built. But because of all the confusion and the exhumations and the disturbing of various graves, the locations of a lot of grave sites couldn't be found. And then they discovered, after the completion of the wall around the cemetery, that a lot of graves were actually outside the wall. And then in 1942, San Diego Avenue was created, which ran a lot alongside El Santo Campo Cemetery. And a lot of people were up in arms that they were going to pave over graves, but you know, local officials never liked to be questioned, so they were firm. They said that they knew for a fact that only one grave was going to be paved over, and they were going to move that one. Well, quite often, government officials say what they think the voters want to hear. In 1993, 35 graves were discovered underneath the asphalt and the concrete. When ground-penetrating radar was used, you know, sometimes when you walk in that cemetery, you feel sadness. And the activity isn't limited to inside the cemetery. There are strange, unexplained cold spots even during the broad daylight hours in the summer. Strange lights are seen moving at dusk inside the cemetery. Ghostly figures are seen floating above the ground. And there's even a woman dressed in period clothing who is often seen standing near the cemetery entrance, gazing out toward the street. Individuals who park in front of the cemetery often find their cars won't start. Car alarms go off for no apparent reason, as if the car has been pushed or something's tested. Now, one of the primary suspects in the haunting of that cemetery is James Robinson, whose name you may associate with the Whaley House. He is was also known as Yankee Jim. He was convicted of attempted grand larceny and executed for the crime on the site where the Whaley House was later built. In fact, he's believed to be one of the ghosts that haunts the Whaley House. Ghosts quite often are just wanting to be remembered. Sometimes they're wanting to send messages. And sometimes they're wanting to finish unfinished business. You never really know for sure what a ghost may or may not want. One of the things that is for certain when you're dealing with a ghost an intelligent haunting, not a residual haunting. It is not a mindless entity. Sometimes they just want to have fun, like the ghost at El Paso High. Sometimes they just don't want to be forgotten. Well, unfortunately, looks to me as if we're out of time. So until tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying, have a truly great evening.